are tuned into another episode of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program, each and every week, I find and feature themes relating to Appalachian culture and folk life, and then play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Well, today I've got a really great program lined up for you. I'm going to be speaking with my guest, Katie Hoffman. Katie is the executive director of Create Appalachia, which is over in Kingsport, Tennessee. Create Appalachia strives to make the Appalachian Highlands a better place to live and work by supporting innovation and entrepreneurship centered around the arts, technology, and creativity. They work to sustain an environment that will generate new businesses, provide jobs in the arts and tech-based business sector, and highlight the important role that creativity plays in the region's economic vitality. I will be speaking with Katie all about what Create Appalachia is and all of the great things that they are doing for the region, along with some great insight onto what she does there. So please stick around and stay tuned for a really great conversation with Katie. I'm so excited that I was able to speak to her for today's episode. First up, let's go ahead and get things started. We got a jam-packed episode today. My home's across the Blue Ridge Mountains from Doc Watson.
My home's across the Blue Ridge Mountain. My home's across the Blue Ridge Mountain. My home is across the Blue Ridge Mountain. And I never expect to see you anymore. Goodbye, my little Timmy darling. Goodbye, my little Timmy darling. Goodbye, my little Timmy darling. For I never expect to see you anymore. I like to got fancy on that one too, didn't I? Rock my baby and Peter Candy. Rock my baby and Peter Candy. Rock my baby and Peter Candy. For I never expect to see you anymore.
Right, folks. Well, today on Mountain Song and Story, I'll be talking with Katie Hoffman, Executive Director of Create Appalachia. Katie is so many things: a traditional ballad singer, songwriter, educator. She operates AppleWorks, which focuses on creating custom assistance in the Appalachian region through grant writing, workshops, community projects, museums, and nonprofits, and so much more. And she's also a culinary lover, and she's just one of those people that are so passionate about promoting and understanding Appalachian culture. I had such a great time talking with Katie about so many different things for this interview, including all about Create Appalachia, the nonprofit that is located over in Kingsport, Tennessee. So we're going to go ahead and get on into our interview now to learn more about Create Appalachia and more about things that Katie is doing. So yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in. So joining me now is Katie Hoffman. Katie, welcome. It is so great to be speaking with you today here on the program.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad we could work this out. So we got so many things to talk about here today. You are such a creative, interesting individual, so I'm glad we're getting a chance to chat. But yeah, so we got a lot of topics, from ballad singing, Appalachian foodways, to the main topics, which are Create Appalachia, which I want to start with. So since 2014, Create Appalachia is an organization that's worked hand in hand with the East Tennessee State University, the cities of Johnson City and Kingsport, Sync Space, and others to promote economic development through the arts by service on communities, delivery of the arts, entrepreneurship workshops, hosting listening sessions, and so much more. It's such a unique, creative thing that I'm excited to talk about. So let's start with you telling our listeners a little bit more about what it is, what you all do, and your role with Create Appalachia.
Okay. Well, like everything else in the world over the last 2 years, there've been a lot of delays in implementing what we want to do. So we're incredibly excited right now because we're really putting things in place. We have a small but mighty center in Johnson City on Boone Street downtown. And we are opening up a large and mighty center in Kingsport. It's going to be about 10,000 square feet. Each of those centers is designed to support creative entrepreneurs. And we define that as anybody who has an imaginative element in the business that they do. So, of course, fine artists fit into that category, and we want to serve them. Artisans, craftspeople, culinary folks. We haven't activated it yet, but we do have a series called Create a Stir that's based on culinary creativity and business. And what we're trying to do in those centers is pull together resources that are going to help make the arts more visible and more viable as an economic driver in the region. So we have programming, which right now we have our Arts at Work program up and running, which is free. It's a professional development series for creative entrepreneurs. And we talk about things like pricing your work. And we talk about things like writing a good bio, a professional bio, website development, graphic design on free Canva, all kinds of things that people can use, just basic resources to do to help promote themselves. Along with the programming, we also have a center. The center in Johnson City and the center in Kingsport will both have commercial software packages that people can come in, create things, and then take them away and sell them. This is great for freelancers because it means that they don't have to buy Adobe or Photoshop or Blender or Maya or any of these other things that these animators and digital media folks need. They can come in, they can rent a space for $25 a day and come in and do what they want. on our system in terms of creating something, and they can take it and sell it directly to a customer. So we're trying to be an affordable alternative for people who do remote working and freelance. We also are going to have a lot of special equipment. Fine artists might be excited to know about the fact that we're going to have two large format printers, Giclée printers, that do edition quality prints with pigment dyes, not regular ink. And, you know, we're just starting out, but looking for ways to serve the creative community, because we believe that not only does it add to the general economic health of the region by directly creating jobs and things, it also adds to the economic health of the region by drawing people here and also by creating a high quality of life. If you look at any place that it's cool to live, they always have an interesting art scene, creative scene going on. And we're just working to support that as much as we can.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Like, all of the things that you have in for creative individuals to have access to is awesome. It's so amazing. I'm wondering why is it so important to have these kind of resources available to people in the community? You know, you mentioned pricing your work, having some resources on how to do that for creative individuals, and even just writing a bio, like these really basic resources to promote oneself. Why is it so important that individuals who are trying to freelance have access to these kind of, you know, this kind of assistance, really?
I think it's my personal observation as an artist and as a former college professor and as a former banker, that this region has always been full of incredibly talented, innovative people. I mean, we have amazing music here. We have amazing food here. We have amazing painters and potters here. We have amazing craftspeople. Well, it turns out that I hadn't even considered until I got connected with Create Appalachia that we also have unbelievable numbers of people who are really talented in graphic design. So, and animation and other technology and art related fields. The person who started Create Appalachia, Cher Cornett, she's our president, our board president. She is in the digital media department at ETSU. She got very tired of watching her really talented students have to go somewhere else to get a job, especially when they wanted to be here, right?
Yeah.
And so when we started putting together the whole idea of Create Appalachia, we were like, all right, let's serve the people who are already here, who want to be here, including these graduates from local colleges and universities, and also including the people who are already here making music, doing pottery, doing fiber art, doing graphic art and other creative things. Let's put together a center that serves their needs. So it's important to have these things because in order for these artists to make any kind of money, they need to present themselves professionally. And they need to have access to things like the Giclée printers or the software packages that we're offering that will help them do the very best work they can. And they don't have to drive 2 hours or longer to access those resources. So what it does is it helps keep the creativity here, and it helps keep the money that the creativity attracts here. It creates small businesses that can thrive. And again, it contributes to everybody's quality of life.
Yeah. And everybody wants to support local when they can, you know, like I don't always want to go to Walmart, but I have to go there to buy the things that I need sometimes. I'd much rather go to a small grocer if there was one, you know. It's so applicable to artistic endeavors as well. So everybody wants to support local, and keeping those resources in the community is, I really value what you all are doing, and I'm so glad that you all exist. So you talked a little bit about, when we spoke before this interview, about how COVID really impacted, you know, Create Appalachia kind of being active in the past 2 years. So tell us a little bit about kind of things reopening up on your all side, and especially in those spaces. What are you all, what's the goal going forward right now with the world kind of slowly going to be pre-pandemic kind of atmosphere?
A lot of what we do right now involves coming into the center to use the resources. Not all of it. We put our Arts at Work programming on Zoom online during the pandemic. So we were still able to offer some of that. We had some great programs. But our original plan involved a very large center in the Taylor Building in Johnson City, where our smaller center is now, that would allow for co-working and incubation offices, and also a video production lab for special effects and animation. But when COVID hit, everything shut down. So we did the best we could to keep it alive with online programming. And then when it started to open up, it just like everybody else, it was kind of fits and starts. Like you could, we got our center put together, and then there was a surge. And then, you know, we got it up and running, and we had a few people coming in there, and then there was another surge. So it's kind of been slow going building that center. And then Kingsport invited us to be in their old city hall building, which is, we're in approximately half of their old city hall building downtown. And they invited us to be part of their innovation village. Well, things have loosened up a little bit, gotten a little bit better. And we feel now like we're able to offer, I think we've got 16 incubation offices in Kingsport, small offices that small businesses can rent, utilities included, like, so internet, you don't have to pay lights or internet or any of that stuff. And we've already got 6 of those offices rented, and we haven't even opened yet, but we've got, you know, people interested in moving in. It was interesting because we got a large grant from the Appalachian Regional Commission, which we're incredibly grateful for. And we were supposed to open in January of 2020. And here we are in February of 2022, just getting around to it. And we were feeling really bad about that until Cher called, and it's meant that we've had to rearrange our plans, and we've had to change things around. And sometimes it's been really frustrating. But, you know, sometimes you're working in a bubble, you're in your own little bubble, and you're worried that you're not getting done what you're supposed to get done. And then you talk to somebody outside, and Cher was telling us at the last board meeting that the ARC folks that she's talking to about rearranging the way we're using some of the money they granted, and they've been very flexible and great about helping us reconfigure things. She said, you know, there are some of these grant projects that have just folded.
Yeah.
She said a large number of the people who applied for, they've just folded. And I'm really proud of us because we are determined to do this. And personally, I appreciate the opportunity to do this because you and I were talking about this. I feel like there are still all these stereotypes about Appalachia that are not really the whole story and not even the real story. And I feel like building this kind of community of creative entrepreneurs, which is going to be, it's all people younger than me for the most part, right? building this community is going to help people see how innovative and how smart and how creative people in this region really are. It's going to showcase some of the things that have ended up being exported from here before. So COVID has hurt us. Then again, there's always a silver lining. I am the optimist. You can't see it, but these are rose-colored glasses. I think the other thing that it has done is it's slowed us down, and it's helped us make more deliberate choices about what we're delivering and what people need. So it's been a mixed bag. And one thing I will say is I've worked with and for a lot of nonprofits in the past, and we just have this boss board who are pitching in and helping us design things. And Stephen Marshall from ETSU, I had a meeting with him a couple of weeks ago with him and with Cher, our board president. We're getting ready to start this continuing education curriculum that's going to be, the arts at work is sort of the basics. You know, you come in for an hour and a half and somebody lays out the basics for you, and it's free, and you get nice handouts and tips and tricks and things. but we're also going to have some continuing ed classes that are going to be, you pay admission to come to them, and they'll be taught by regional experts. And sometimes we'll bring people in from outside, but they're going to be hands-on helping people hone their skills. For instance, one that we've been trying to do for 3 years now, we're finally going to get it done, is a food styling workshop with some people. I know Fred and Elliot out of Richmond, Virginia, Fred and Elliot Photography. They have an international profile. They've worked with national and international brands on food styling. And we're going to bring them in so that local photographers can work with these people. And then there'll be some kind of digital badge or some kind of certification that you've completed this course, and you can add that to your resume or your website or whatever. So, you know, it's given us time to think through what we can and can't do. There are certain things like bringing Fred and Elliot in that we're still determined to do. And we're looking for input. So if there are creatives who listen to this show who have ideas, I am all ears. It's Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at createappalachia.com. Email me.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I'm so excited for your all's future, and I'm so excited to just get involved, because again, like, just having this hub, you're right, like having this hub in this region is just, it's so important. It's like keeping the talent here. I love that, what you were saying about that. Yes. Especially. So I know so many of my peers, people my own age, older and younger than me, and I'll be 30 this year. Like, so many people have to leave the region. I'm constantly hearing that. And I'm even an example of that. I left West Virginia to come to Bristol for job opportunities, you know? So it's just, I love keeping things localized, and you're here, you live here if you're passionate about the area and all the wonderful arts and culture that's here. You know, why wouldn't you want to stay? Like, you don't necessarily have to leave. So you were just talking a little bit about Arts at Works, and I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on some of the other programs offered through Create Appalachia. So Arts at Works, and then there's the other one on the website called Create a Stir. And I'm just wondering about those. You know, you all have these resources for artistic individuals, and now there's also different programs that they can get involved in as well.
Right. The Create a Stir programs have tended to be, well, they're focused on culinary arts. And we've only had a couple because, again, COVID shut us down. But the first one was in 2016, and we brought in Sherry Castle, who's just this amazing Southern icon when it comes to cooking. She's got a bunch of cookbooks, fabulous cookbooks. I highly recommend them. She was the senior food editor for Southern Living. She's got a show on North Carolina PBS right now called The Key Ingredient. And in 2016, I was working for the Crooked Road as a consultant working on their food-centered events. We called them festivals. And she came in as a speaker. And I thought, well, while I was bringing her in for the Crooked Road, you know, every artist loves a double booking, right? Like at a gig. Like,
oh yeah.
You don't come to town for just one thing, right? So I was like, well, hey, let's have her do. So we worked with Food City and they sponsored it. And I don't know if you've ever been upstairs in one of their stores, but they have these great spaces that have like the cameras and everything. So you can really see what people are doing. I mean, it's very high tech. It's great. And the thing about Sherry is that Sherry has mad skills as a recipe tester and a cook, but she's also hilarious. I mean, she is so funny. She does a lot with Appalachian food as well. And I was at the Appalachian Food Summit and I heard somebody say, well, I just follow Sherry around with a pencil and a piece of paper so that I can write down the things that she says because they're so funny. But she came and she did a cooking demonstration at Food City and it was very successful. We had a good turnout for that. We also, last year, we had Meredith Lee lined up. Meredith Lee is internationally known. She's written a book called Ethical Meat and another one called Pure Charcuterie. And she's out of Asheville, but she does all kinds of curing. She does meat curing. She's a professional butcher. And she was going to do a sausage making demo for us, and that got canceled. So I'm hoping that we can get that back. But I have a soft spot for food topics. So, you know, I was like, let's do food creativity too. We just don't want to leave anybody out. We want to serve everybody. And again, I think part of bringing Fred and Elliot in was going to be a Create a Stir program for restaurant professionals on how to take good pictures with your phone, like how to take good pictures for Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and how to do video posts. So, you know, we're kind of trying to figure out what people need and deliver that. So the three programming streams are going to be Arts at Work, which is already up and running, Create a Stir, which has hit some bumps, but it's still there. We're working on that too. And the Continuing Ed, which is I think going to be really great for freelancers who want specific skills. Because they can learn these skills and then they can come use. We're going to have video production studios. We're going to have photography studios. We're going to have all kinds of resources where they can come and use these things and sell the work.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I mean, even musicians could come in and do video production, because we'll also have consultants who, if people want to come in and edit something or whatever, we'll have technicians who can work with people to help them do the technical parts that maybe they aren't so adept with yet.
Yeah. And I just like having that access to resources again is just, it's so important because it takes away sometimes the roadblock that some people run into when they don't have, you know, they don't have a camera or equipment is expensive. Adobe, you were talking about Adobe. I mean, like subscription services, like printers, ink, all this stuff. You could be a really creative individual and have a full-time artistic business where you're doing it full-time. But those things, if you have to buy something, like if I have to buy a microphone, like that could be $500-$800. Everything is so expensive. And especially for the little guy, it's even more pricey. So
stranger.
Put your loving hand in mine.
Hello, stranger.
Put your loving hand in mine.
You are a stranger.
And you're a pal of mine. Get up, rounder. Let a working man lay down.
Get up, rounder.
Let a working man lay down.
You are a rounder.
But you're all out and down. Every time I ride 6 and 4 streetcars.
Oh, every time
I ride 6 and 4 streetcars.
I can see my baby
peeping through the bar. She bowed her head. She waved both hands at me.
She bowed her head.
She waved both hands at me.
I'm prison bound.
I'm longing to be free. Troubles are like mine.
Oh, I'll see you.
When your troubles are like mine.
Oh, I'll see you.
When you haven't got a dime. Weeping like a willow. Mourning like a dove.
Weeping like a willow.
Mourning like a dove.
There's a girl up the country
that I really love. Put your loving hand in mine.
Hello, stranger.
Put your loving hand in mine.
You are a stranger.
And you're a pal of mine.
Hello, stranger, there by the Carter family. You know them. I know them. So if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and today we are talking to Katie Hoffman all about Create Appalachia, the nonprofit over in Kingsport, Tennessee, that has state-of-the-art facilities, community events, expert-led programming on creative entrepreneurship. They're just this really great hub that supports the arts and all creative endeavors right here in Central Appalachia. So I'm so excited to be talking with Katie today for today's program. We're going to go ahead and get on into the second half of our interview.
So you are a lot like me, Katie, with just being interested in so many different topics, especially focused in Appalachia when we talked before this. Definitely found that out. So I was hoping now we could maybe transition and talk a little bit about you, because you have a really interesting story. Even the story about how you kind of got into the role you're in now is interesting, because like you just mentioned, you were a banker before this, and you did have a really great story about the Carter family.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got where you are, because you've just, I mean, you've done so much. I jotted down so many things, and it's like a life well lived and very creative up to this point. So tell us about your journey.
Well, I'll start with the Carter family story, because that's shortly after I moved out here from the Virginia Beach area. With my former husband, we started hanging out at the Carter Fold because I had been a big fan growing up. My parents took me to bluegrass festivals and all that kind of stuff around the Richmond, Virginia area. And I loved Mother Maybelle Carter. I had an auto harp. I mean, I started playing an auto harp when I was, I don't know, 10. I loved it. And when I moved out here, I was a banker in Virginia Beach, and I ended up getting a job with the bank with Sovereign Bank out here in Southwest Virginia. I was living in Johnson City, but I was driving over to Southwest Virginia every day. And I started out in Abingdon, but eventually ended up as the branch manager in Weber City. And when I found out that the Carters were my customers, I was so starstruck, I could hardly stand it. I mean, Jeanette Carter walked in the branch one day and all the folks were laughing because they knew how much I loved the Carter family. All the people who worked in the branch who were just awesome. Just, they thought it was hilarious, you know, and Jeanette, they told Jeanette that I sang. So I don't think I told you this part before, but Jeanette, you've probably seen videos of her. You probably never met her, but okay. She had this very distinct way of talking. And they told her that I was a singer, and she came into my office and she said, "Well, now the next time you come to the Carter Fold, you're going to have to sing something for the people." And I was like, "Really?" So by golly, when I showed up, she got me up on stage, at the intermission, and I got to sing a ballad, and I just thought I had died and gone to heaven. And then when I was in the ETSU bluegrass band during graduate school, I got to play that stage with the band. And on my 40th birthday, I had everybody come from all over the place to celebrate my birthday. And my big thing was that I chartered a bus and took everybody from my house in Greene County over to the Carter Fold on Saturday night to celebrate my birthday. So that's how awesome. Big a Carter family fan I am.
Yes. That sounds like a great birthday.
It was a great birthday. And I also, shortly after, well, I left Weber City and I ended up not too long after that, going back to school at ETSU to get my master's in English. And that's when I became part of the ETSU bluegrass band. That's back when there weren't very many bands. There were only like five when I was doing it, which was an amazing experience. Jack Tottle was the director then. And I feel very lucky because I got plunked down in a place where I just fit, where the music was not only so good, but so open. Like, people were having jam sessions, still do this. Everybody was so friendly about, "Hey, come play and let's jam and let's," you know, there were plenty of places for me to go and learn. And I will tell you this, and this relates to Create Appalachia, Jack Tottle and Raymond McLean, right after him, Raymond produced my CD. And we had dinner one night when it was all done and it was packaged and my shipment of CDs had come in, and there it was in my hand. And they had a talk with me about artistry and about not giving it away. And they gave me some amazing advice, which I think is really, come to think of it, at the center of what I'm doing now with Create Appalachia. And that is that what I do is worth something. And when people call and ask me to perform for free, or people call and ask me to write something for free, I need to tell them no. Because when you do that, I don't know if I can even, well, you're screwing the other people who are trying to make a living, and you are devaluing it for other artists and devaluing it for the region. And, you know, if you want to talk about something that's non-extractive, it's our culture and our music. You can't pick it up and move it someplace else so that it'll be cheaper. Right. So that hit home with me, and it's a lot at the center of what I do. And at the time I was also teaching at Tusculum College, and the guy who taught museum studies just thought, he was like, "If you take me to the Carter Fold," he just wasn't into it. So he let me teach all of the material culture classes and the folk life classes. And I was in heaven. So I taught at Tusculum for over a decade. And it was during that time that I co-chaired the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. And I think I was telling you about that the other day. That was when I realized that every time you talk about Appalachia, you have two audiences. You have an audience that's external, people who have a particular impression about the region, but you also have an audience that's internal, and they're looking at you and they're wondering, what are you going to say about us? And is it going to be right? And is it going to be true? And can we live with it? And it's I'll be honest with you. I think most of the time, I think more about the internal audience than I do the external audience. When I present Appalachia, I'm like, would people be okay with the way I'm telling their story?
Yeah.
You know, and that's developed over all of that time, you know, first getting to know the Carter family and the wonderful people. I mean, just the nicest people you could ever, you know, Jeanette and her and Rita. But from that time to this time, I have learned so many important lessons, and I feel like Create Appalachia has let me pull it all together. I don't think I told you this either, but I was teaching, I was going through a divorce, and I moved back to Richmond for a while, and I was teaching at Virginia Commonwealth University, which is this huge, sprawling urban university, right? Very arts focused, which was kind of cool. And I was teaching a class called textual analysis. And it was in that class that I learned that a quilt is a text, that a cake is a text. You can read everything.
Oh,
my art students taught me a ton. You know, I went into it thinking literature. So I decided to make it an Appalachian literature class. And on the first day of class, I went in and I thought, okay, we're going to find out what stereotypes they have in their heads, right? So before I even handed out the syllabus, I said, get out a piece of paper, get out a pen. I'm going to say a word. I want you to write down everything that comes to mind when I say it. And I want you to not stop writing. Just write down everything you can think of. So they all got their paper out and they're all looking at me. And I said, okay, here's the word, Appalachia. And they all started writing. And I handed out a bunch of envelopes. And I said, write your name on the envelope, put the piece of paper in the envelope. I'm not interested in knowing what's on it. Just put your name on the envelope and pass it in to me. So during the semester, we read books. I had all kinds of different textiles because I'm sort of semi-interested in those too. I cooked for them. I made them an apple stack cake. I sang to them. I played music for them. We read novels. We read nonfiction. We watched films. You know, I mean, everything I could think of, the best of Appalachian literature and films and the things that I knew would open their eyes a little bit. So the end of the semester came, and it was the last day of class, and I gave them a take-home exam because I'm that kind of mean. And I said, okay, everybody get out a piece of paper. I'm going to say a word. I want you to write down everything that comes. Sorry, I get sort of emotional when I talk about this. I want you to write down everything that comes to mind when I say that word. So they got out their pieces of paper and they looked at me and I said, okay, Appalachia. And then they started writing. And I pulled out the envelopes from the first day of class. And I said, open the envelope and look at your list. And I said, one of your exam questions, one of the things that you can do for your essay exam is to write an essay on what changed your list from the beginning to the end. Oh my God. I almost couldn't grade the exam papers without crying, you know, because these people had developed such a new respect and such a new perspective on what the region is. And I see my current job as a way to do that on such a big scale and to help the region tell its story. That's what I've been about from the very beginning. It's really not about me. It's about, and I feel this way, like when I sing a ballad, I feel this way about the ballad. It's not about me singing. It's about the connection between me and the audience and what that ballad has to say. And I make some decisions interpreting it, but it's not about me. It's about all of us. And that's another thing about Appalachia, is that it's a very collaborative culture. And it's a very open culture if people don't come in, if people come in with an open heart and curiosity. People here are very open and love to talk about their experience to people who are truly interested. And, you know, I've just seen it as such a welcoming place, which is not always what you get from the stereotypes, such a generous place, such a an innovative place. People here can take nothing and make something beautiful and useful out of it. So I don't know. I guess that's just how my mind works when it comes to Appalachia, you know, doing the best I can to represent it right. And to talk about the ugly spots with the beautiful things, and how it's no different from any other culture anywhere else in that way, that there are great things here and that there are things here that could probably be better.
Yeah. Oh, so well put. And the story about your class is, yeah, you got me emotional too as well. So that's great. I love that. So there's also, you know, people talking, I often hear this about, like, the culture is vanishing. And it's always, you know, whenever I started this program, I've always had guests and have talked to individuals like yourself, artists, musicians, just people in the region that are doing interesting things, folkways. And I think that I had a question that I like to ask people about. Where do you see the future of Appalachia going? Like, it seems like a lot of the culture is who's going to continue it? You know, I always would ask that question. And then with just talking to so many people and just being an Appalachian and being in this, like, arts and culture sector through work and just through professional interests myself, I don't really ask that question anymore, because I, like, the culture is not vanishing. Like, it's very much here, and it's taken me a few years to kind of come to that conclusion, because it's so interesting to everybody I ask is always like, no, it's not. It's not going anywhere. It's right here. So what's your take on that? I know you have some opinions on that as well.
Well, I think I told you a friend invited me to come sing ballads at her museum exhibit that was called Vanishing Appalachia. And I said, I'm happy to come sing, but you know me, and I'm going to talk about how Appalachia is not, in fact, vanishing.
Yeah.
And so I'm one of those people. It's like, nope, we're not vanishing. We're right here. A couple of things that you said, that you asked about, you said something about how sometimes you'd ask people what's going to become of Appalachian culture. First of all, maybe it's because I was a college professor before so long, and until now, it's been my favorite job, because I love working with people who are curious and learning. I love it. And now I get to do it again in a different context. But I have a lot of faith in young people. I've worked with them. I've seen them. Yes, they have less experience than I do, but they have more energy than I do. And they have all this imagination. And I feel like when I look around, especially, I've especially seen this in Appalachian music, because of my long association with that. And I used to MC the Youth Music Festival for the Crooked Road every year. And, you know, I would see these people on stage, and I would see how they have this extreme reverence for the tradition, but then they kind of put their own mark on it and take it forward. And it got me thinking a lot as a ballad singer about, it used to crack me up. You know, the bluegrassers and the old timers are all like, they fuss at each other, you know, about, well, ours is better. No, ours is better. And I'm like, hey, I'm a ballad singer. I'm older than both of you, you know. And the funny thing is that when you think about the ballad tradition and you think about how there are like how many thousands of versions of Barbara Allen or the Wagoner's Lad or, you know, any of these great songs, it's because culture changes. It's because they, you know, they were different in the British Isles than they were when they came over here, and they were serving the needs of people who were living in the mountains, and their lives were different. And so the songs were clearly built on the same structures, but they had different elements because people needed them to be a little different. They needed them to fit their lives here. And the thing I've always loved about the folk tradition is that it is the folk tradition, and you can make it yours. And I think the best artists do that. They manage to nod to the past, but also push things into the future. So when I look around at what's happening in Appalachia, and I see places like the birthplace of country music and the Crooked Road and the people I've met through Tennessee Craft and who do traditional things, Over Mountain Weavers at Exchange Place in Kingsport, I feel really good about Appalachian culture. And I just think the trick is getting other people to understand the fabulous things that are going to happen because of these groups that have taken this on and that respect it and want to keep it going, not necessarily exactly the same way they learned it.
Yeah. And I think that people like yourself who are like ambassadors for the region are just so important to be here, you know, and to be promoting and to be educating people on so many different things. Like, I have to share with you, I got my hair cut a few weeks ago. I know this is radio interview and you can't see how long my ponytail is, but it's already like to my waist, it feels like. So it doesn't look like I got a haircut at all. But I got a haircut here in Bristol, and the girl cutting my hair, you know, small talk, asked where I was from and where I worked and things like that. And I said I was from West Virginia, and she went, ew, like, really? That sucks. And I was like, oh no, girl, let me tell you about how great West Virginia is and how great like the mountains are in Appalachia. And I talked to her while she was cutting my hair. And by the end of that conversation, she was like, well, I really want to go there and check out the new national park. The New River Gorge is a national park now. It's not just
I know.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, I'm constantly running into people, and I know that so many you can relate to this. Other people listening could relate to this. Just always running into people, even here at home, like here where you are, who just have this negative perception of, oh, there's nothing good that could come out of here. It just really sucks that you're from there, because that sounds like you had to get out of there. And I'm like, no, like, I want to stay here, you know?
So, first of all, I love West Virginia. My father's from Charleston, West Virginia. And listening to my dad talk about growing up, that was one of the first times I caught a glimpse into the diversity that is actually present in Appalachia if you look for it. And West Virginia is a great example because of the mines bringing in people from other places, of course, but also my father's father was Jewish, and his family came to West Virginia, to Charleston, in the 1890s to escape the pogroms in Russia. And his mother's family were from Scotland. And, you know, my dad talked about Charleston as this very cosmopolitan place when he was growing up, because Union Carbide was there and you had all the mining, and there, you know, there was a lot going on in Charleston. And Dad said, you know, there were a lot of people from a lot of different places who were mingling and getting along and doing well in Charleston. I always thought that was so, and I asked him one time, I said, well, did the Jewish family get upset that Jacob was marrying a Presbyterian? Did the Presbyterians get upset that, you know, Mary was marrying a Jew? And he's like, no, they all loved each other. They just totally got along. So I think that was my first taste of how, and studying Appalachian literature in depth, especially when you look at the local color movement and how people would come in, it was so unfair. Like, these writers would come in from outside and they'd spend 3 or 4 days in a town and they would zero in on the strangest people they met in the town and write about them. They didn't write about most of the people in the town, right? They would find the weirdest things about the town because they were writing travel stuff or local color fiction, and they were trying to get the oohs and the ahs. So they would focus on the non-mainstream parts and the non-mainstream people and not the mainstream. And I could just go into a whole long thing about how exploitative that was, but yeah, that's what I'm fighting against. You know, it's like, no.
So Katie, we are out of time, but thank you so much again for speaking with me today. I really appreciate it. This has been a really great conversation. Before we go, where can folks go to learn more about what you're doing, and where can they go to learn about Create Appalachia?
Well, to learn about Create Appalachia, they can go to our website, which is just Create Appalachia on the web. They can follow us on social media, which is at Create Appalachia. They can email me at katie@createappalachia.org, org because we're nonprofit. And AppleWorks has its own website. That's appalworks.com. And I'm getting ready to work with an amazing young woman, Samantha Culbertson, to revise my website because it needs some attention. But at least it gives you an idea of who I am and what I do.
Yeah, wonderful. And I will have your contact information and links to everything you just said posted on the Mountain Song and Story blog page after the program. So if people didn't get a chance to grab a pen and write that down while they heard it, they can go check that out after the show. But Katie, thank you again so much for the great conversation today. We could keep going for another hour, but they're going to kick me off the air.
Okay, great to talk to you, Tony. I look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
All right, folks, that wraps up today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in to the program. Remember, you can catch this show, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past shows if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page, which is found on over at listenradiobristol.org. As always, I'll have all the songs and materials from today's show up there, so please go check it out if you want to learn more about Create Appalachia. Special thanks again to my guest, Katie Hoffman, for taking the time to speak with me today. Thank you so much, Katie. It was a great, fun conversation we had. To learn more about Create Appalachia, visit www.createappalachia.org. Folks, once again, my name is Tony Doman. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you right here next week.